and welcome to another episode of 99 Problems But A Boss Ain't One, the podcast that tackles your freelance challenges one episode at a time. I'm one of your co-hosts, Katie Carlisle, and I run Squarespace Queen, a web design and training business.
And I'm Michelle, I'm your other co-host, and I own Dive Deeper Development, which is a training and coaching business.
And today we're going to be talking about reducing your freelance carbon footprint, or at least starting to think about your your freelance carbon footprint. So why are we even thinking about this? Well, we know that big business is pretty rubbish at looking after our planet for the most part. So it looks like it's up to us micro businesses to lead the way. But can we actually make a difference? And what can little old us actually do for the planet? And why should we even make this a priority in our business? Michelle, why should we care about this? We're not like BP or Shell. Why do we care?
Yeah, I mean, I think the short answer, Katie, is our planet is screwed. So we're hearing the word climate crisis on a daily basis, aren't we? And at the time of recording, we've just seen Greta Thunberg be detained by German police with a big smile on her face. You know, we're seeing more action ramped up because we are in a climate crisis. So I think as we're seeing more and more extreme weather events, more disruption, I think it's clear that we can't just wait for the government or big businesses to do something. We've all got to do our bit, and lots of people doing a little bit will make a massive difference in addition to lots of people doing the big companies doing big things. So the answer is we simply can't wait. I don't know. I also think, Katie, as well, it can save us a bit of money too. If we reduce our carbon footprint, then we're using less energy, and energy is really expensive right now. Yeah. So if you can cut those costs out, it does hit the bottom line. Casey, I don't know how into this you are, because I know this is a subject you're passionate about, but I also know that there's penalties really for businesses that don't sort of get on board, and there are incentives for companies big and small that do get on board. So for example, in the Manchester area where Casey and I spend a lot of time, there was a proposed clean air zone. The proposal's been put on hold for now, but if that comes in the way that it was proposed, then any business who had a van, say, that went into that zone would have to pay £10 a day. And that reaches pretty much out to me in the Peak District. So you imagine if you're a gardener or a hairdresser or, you know, this sort of thing, it's going to add £10 a day if you have a little van or something like that. But there's also grants. I've seen grants for e-bikes, for electric vehicles and things like this. So I think this is the direction of travel as far as business is concerned, and I think we're probably better to get on board sooner rather than later. And customers like it too. And Katie, I know that you've spoken in the past about, you know, your passion for this subject. How do you find customers connecting with that?
Yeah, definitely. I used to work for sustainability charities and nonprofits. So it's something I've cared about for a really long time, and it was actually quite interesting before we started recording this episode, Michelle suggested it, and I was actually like, oh, I just don't feel like I have anything to say. Everything I do is really obvious. And then we had a chat about it. I was like, actually, we don't know what's obvious to other people and what's not. So we hope that in this episode, we're going to give you some tips and maybe help you think about something that you haven't thought about, or maybe give you a new way to think about something that you have already thought about. And I was just a bit cynical. I was like, oh, there's no point. Everything's rubbish. We've got these binding targets. So they're just going to change them. It's terrible. But after I had a little strop, I was like, no, this is important, and it's better to have lots of people, like you said, Michelle, lots of people doing a little bit imperfectly than a handful of people doing it perfectly. And I think that's one of the barriers that people actually have is, oh, I can't do it perfect. If I can't do it perfectly, I shouldn't do it. And people feel scared to talk about it because they can be, you know, people who then criticize them for not doing enough and things like that. But I definitely found that by talking about it, it's helped me connect with clients. I've been able to get work doing websites for sustainability and environmental nonprofits because I've made it very clear about my commitment to sustainability, and especially, yeah, from an environmental perspective. We're focusing on carbon footprint today, but even just stepping back a little bit and, yeah, just the wider environmental and sustainability impacts. And sustainability is more than just the environment. They often say people, planet, profit. I'd actually like that phrase. It's about, you know, people, a fair economy, equity amongst people, and keeping the planet so that it keeps existing for future generations. But yeah, I've found that, you know, our previous episode, we talked about being who you are, sharing your values, sharing what's important to you. And I think for me, I know as a consumer, I look for other companies that share my values around sustainability and environmental commitments and being an ethical business. And quite often those things go hand in hand. So I know that's what I look for. And I think that when people come to me, I think part of it is my stance. And I think it just helps me connect with other people in that kind of community, and it helps me find my people as well by talking about it. So yeah, I've definitely found that it's helped my business from a purely getting business perspective. But I'm sure that the things I do also, you know, some of them help me to save money, some of them make me feel like, yeah, I'm actually doing something and making a difference. What about you, Michelle?
Well, I think that's it, Katie, as well, because, you know, I coach a lot of business startups, and actually I ask them this question, why is it important to you? And I find they're really passionate about it as well. And actually, as well as doing it in our business as customers, you know, you've mentioned, Katie, we've talked about who gives a crap before, you know, buying toilet paper from them, getting, you know, fair trade tea, shopping local, all this kind of stuff. And people like that feel good factor about doing business with businesses that have this on their agenda, even if they're not perfect. The other thing that always comes up, so when I ask businesses why this is important for us as solopreneurs or whatever you want to call us, I was expecting things like, oh, you know, we're going to have to, or the planet's changing, or it's going to save me money. Actually, the first thing that people come up with is it's the right thing to do. And the sort of that moral imperative is the main driver. I expected that to feature. Never expect it to be the main thing, but most people go, well, it's the right thing to do, is it? We've all got responsibility, we should all do a bit, it's the right thing. And I think this is a great example, whereas in business, doing the right thing is good for business as well as being good for the planet as well.
100%. And that's very heartening, actually, that is the priority for people, and then everything else can be secondary. So we're not going to spend ages talking about the science, but Michelle, like from a science perspective, why is it also important to do something?
Yeah, 100%. I'm not a scientist, but what? I do sessions on this for small businesses, and worked with a climate change consultancy to find out a little bit more. So here's some of the things they told me. First of all, the Climate Change Act. I mean, our government was one of the first in the world, the first actually, to have a legally binding target for reducing emissions. So the Climate Change Act, under that, we've committed to being a net zero country by 2050. As Katie has already suggested, it would seem like that's quite a demanding target. And yeah, I share her cynicism about us sticking to that. I can see that goalpost being moved. But it's great that it's there, because I do see local councils setting targets of businesses being net zero by 2030. Everyone's kind of jumping on board. The reason why, as we said, the planet is screwed. So I'm assuming everybody listening to this did geography, and we know about the greenhouse effect. So quite literally, the sun radiates heat towards the earth. Some of it's absorbed, some of it's reflected back, but actually quite a lot of it is trapped by greenhouse gases, and that warms the earth at an alarming rate. So we've seen things, Katie, I can't remember at the beginning of the year, I think it was like a triple whammy of storms, wasn't there, last January, I think. We've seen things like flooding, we've seen things like droughts, things like fires. And Katie, I know about you, but when we had that heat wave last summer, when temperatures would go up to 30, 35, 40 degrees, I couldn't do recording of videos in my room, because laptops, the batteries start to go after 35 degrees. They start to, the energy drains really quickly, and I physically couldn't sit with the heat in this office because it's like a greenhouse. So there's work I literally couldn't do. I had to reschedule it because of the weather, and I've never had to do that before. And I don't know if you know that travel disruption, you know, places you can't go. That's not sustainable. You know, the a football match got called off from Ipswich Town during the Beast from the East. A train track got washed away. You know, this, you can think about the disruption that caused the business. So this warming is not obviously a good thing. Now, just to explain, there are lots of greenhouse gases. So, but most of them are probably not going to come across your business. So there's nitrous oxide, which I think is used as a fuel additive or a propellant in whipped cream. It's also used as laughing gas. You shouldn't use it for that. That's bad for your health. But you probably don't have much of that in your business. You might use some methane if you are working with farm machinery or you're doing a very outdoorsy sort of business. And there's also what we call F gases. So if these replaced CFCs. So if you might use these if you use any refrigeration units in your business, or if your suppliers also use these in this business too. So it's not just carbon, but carbon is by far the most prevalent. So it makes up for about 80% of the damage. So it's not as harmful. Actually, methane is significantly more harmful than carbon is. but we just don't use quite as much of it. And since the Industrial Revolution, we're releasing more carbon to the atmosphere at a much faster rate. So yes, it's true, the carbon cycle has existed for millions of years. Yes, it's true, the Earth, some of the Earth's heating is natural, but there is absolutely no denying that the sheer volume of carbon at the rate it's being released is definitely man-made. And we can't do graphs through podcast format, but if you could, you would see a correlation between the carbon, the atmosphere, parts per million, and the heat. I know, you know, like I say, correlation, not causation, but we most of the world's scientists, you know, are agreed.
But yeah, imagine the line, and it's called Graph of Doom at the top.
Basically. Did you see NASA had this thing? They've released a wonderful little GIF, a graphic of the Earth's temperature over like so many like years and years and years and years, and it's like as a spiral, it's just getting hotter and hotter and hotter and hotter.
No.
Really
that.
Good, and you could see the fluctuations, but and you know, and the Earth temperature fluctuate, but the trend was phenomenal. So we can't wait. That's what we're saying here. That's why. So this is why you're hearing people bang on about carbon. If you hear people bang on about carbon, and you're thinking, what does carbon net zero mean? What does carbon neutrality mean? It just basically means you try and reduce your carbon footprint, so you get your carbon uses down as far as humanly possible. If you were to also offset there are any carbon emissions that were left, because you're probably not going to get all the carbon out of your freelance business, if you offset the remainder, you're in a net zero position. So if you hear carbon neutral or carbon net zero, and someone's like, what are you doing to get to carbon net zero? That's what they're talking about, getting your carbon down and offsetting anything that you can't remove from your business. That's it. By the way, there is no, I thought it'd be a standard, you know, like some man with a clipboard would come around and go, congratulations, you're carbon neutral. That doesn't matter. You can basically claim to be carbon neutral. I personally would want to be in a position where I could demonstrate that I knew what my carbon footprint was, and I can demonstrate that I've offset what is left. But really, there is no sort of hard and fast certification. You can just make that claim, which is kind of a good thing, but it's also kind of a bad thing. On the whole, it's complicated. I guess it's a good thing. But anyway, it might be something you want to go for in your business. So that's it, Katie. I'll leave it there. I'm not a detail person. I'm not a scientist.
Yeah, and even though I used to work in sustainability, we actually were much more around the kind of solution-focused stuff rather than looking into the science stuff. So it's not even my area of expertise either. But let's talk about solutions. So what can we do? And I think probably before we jump into this, it's actually probably worth saying that as freelancers, we're in this kind of weird hybrid position where the stuff that we do in our personal life kind of then seeps into what we do as a business, and maybe vice versa as well. So whilst we might not think that we actually have control over a lot of it, some of the things that we don't associate as being a business carbon, you know, emission or anything like that, could actually be related to your freelance business. So there's actually potentially more things that you can control that are related to your business, that if you were working, you know, in an office for a company, they would be considered business related carbon emissions. So we'll talk through some of the things that you might have some control over and might be able to make a change. So Michelle, what's one thing we can start by doing?
Yeah, I think one thing you can do is, if you want to know what your situation is, you might want to know what your carbon footprint is. But if you want to work out your carbon footprint, it's not too difficult to do. There are plenty of apps and calculators. The Carbon Trust has a great one, for example, some good tips from them about how to reduce your carbon in business. But in order to do your carbon footprint, you'd need some data. So one thing you could just start to do, even without making any changes, is just record your usage. And that sounds like a pain in the butt, but it's really not that difficult. I would hope you're keeping your books up to date. So whenever each month or quarter, when you do your books for your business, and you note down the amount of energy you used, and I hope you are noting down the amount of energy you've used, because even if you work from home in a home office, you can work out a proportion of your heating, which is classed as a business expense. Katie, I don't know how you do that. I just give a percentage to my accountant. Do you work that out for yourself on your tax return?
Yeah, I have a little formula based on the amount of time I work from home and the number of rooms in the house proportional to the room that I tend to work in for my business. And then, yeah, I will be very honest, and I look at it once a year when I'm about to submit my tax return, rather than every month or every quarter. It would be probably better to do it every month or every quarter. But I basically, at the end of the year, go through and look at all my energy use and then multiply that by my little number that I've put together to get a percentage that I use to claim for. Because yeah, if you were in an office, you would have heating costs. So when you're at home, you're allowed to claim that as well. There's various calculators online. I know Coconut, who are a software accounting tool that Michelle and I have used in the past. They have a calculator online, and HMRC on their own website actually have some examples of how different freelance professions can calculate that. So yeah, absolutely. If you are using energy at home, you can claim a percentage of that towards your self-assessment tax return.
Great. And so actually that process that Katie's just described, I would use that for separating what energy usage is business and what energy usage is personal. And so what I suggest you do is when you do your record keeping and you make a note of the energy uses or the costs, just look at your bill, and on it, it will have the kilowatt hours or whatever unit of measurement, and just make a note of your energy usage there. If you want to keep it simple, because I get this question a lot, just capture the whole sort of usage, and at the end of the year, as Katie just described, just go back, do your calculation, and separate business from personal. You don't have to do this, but if you do it and keep that data for at least a year, it can help you. Well, one thing you can do is help you predict your energy usage and seasonal spikes, but the other thing is you'll be able to measure year on year the difference you're making. But you will need that data to go into a carbon footprint calculator. Then just go into your carbon footprint calculator, whichever, plenty online, and you can just put your figures in, and that will tell you your carbon footprint. You might, if you use these calculators, you might come across something that says scope 1, 2, or 3. Don't really worry about that too much. Scope 1 and 2 basically means the stuff you directly use, or like any energy you use in your business, such as petrol uses. Scope 2 is energy you draw down from the grid, so kind of like an indirect. We're only really concerned with those because we can control them. Scope 3 is like suppliers, waste going out of your business. That's really complicated and you're not in control of it. So most calculators will use scope 1 and 2, but they'll separate those out for you. It's not really that important. So you just put the figures in, it'll be fine. It doesn't make a huge difference. And the other thing you'll get is a carbon dioxide equivalent, by the way, if you use these. So I mentioned if you use methane, nitrous oxide, F-gases, this sort of thing, you don't get a separate footprint. You don't get a methane footprint and a carbon footprint. What the calculators will do is they'll combine all those different types of energy use together, and it will say CO2 EKG or something like that. And it's one carbon dioxide equivalent, so you've got one figure, and if you bring that down, it just makes it nice and easy. So there we go. Katie, I don't know if I explained that easily. That's kind of what's happening there.
The other thing we can mention as well is, as well as your kind of work from home costs, is similarly if you use a vehicle for work at all, or any of your work travel costs, and you've made a note of those throughout the year, and then a percentage of the vehicle that you use for work and any travel that you have to do for work, then you probably already have records of a lot of that if you're claiming back tax for that anyway. So you're not necessarily creating loads of extra work for yourself by calculating this. The one thing I'd say is don't get bogged down in calculating your carbon footprint at the expense of actually taking action to reduce it. So I think it's useful to know, and it can be motivating if you're able to make it, the number go down. But if you have time to do either an action to reduce it or time to calculate it, take the action. That's the most important thing. And actually, in terms of taking actions, we've probably all heard of kind of reduce, reuse, recycle, and it's kind of similar for your carbon footprint and your carbon emissions as well. So the first thing is to avoid a carbon emission if you can. So, you know, can you, and we'll look at some practical tips, but, you know, can you walk instead of drive? Do you need a meeting? Can you avoid the travel? Can you reduce your need to use energy? Then it's reduce, then replace, and then finally offset. So offset is very much at the end of the list, because A, offsetting isn't the best solution. It's a bit of a band-aid solution, if I'm being honest, I think. You know, there's a lot of, it's been in the news recently, a lot of offsetting schemes are actually not as effective as they claim to be and things like that. So the best way is actually if we can reduce and replace things to start with. So swap something for a more energy efficient version. But again, it makes sense to reduce your usage first, because then it's much easier for you to then swap to a lower energy version, and it costs you less to offset if you've done all those other steps first. So not only does it make sense for the overall carbon offsetting, it actually makes sense for you and your wallet as well.
Yeah, definitely, Kate. It's much better not to put carbon to the atmosphere in the first place than it is to offset it once it's in the environment. So I think you're right, avoid, reduce, replace, offset last. I do meet businesses that go, oh, I'm in this offset scheme, and I publish it on my website, which is kind of lovely, but you really want to get the carbon usage down first. As Kate said, it makes your life cheaper and easier to do so too.
Yeah, and actually when we're talking about reducing and replacing, when you're making a decision to buy something or, you know, if you're buying a new home or you're doing a kind of overhaul of your house, you know, like a, you know, renovation or anything like that, or if you're buying any new equipment or anything for your work, do try and think of how it would make it easier to buy something now that makes it easier for you to do the reducing and the replacing part of it. So one example, my phone and my laptop are both modular, which means that if one bit fails, I can very easily myself, or with the, for in the case of my laptop, possibly with the assistance of a computer store, I can very easily get a new part for it and replace it without having to avoid any warranties. Like, you're encouraged to open it up. It's okay to do that. You know, it's not a case of, okay, well, you can try and fix it, but then you've avoided the warranty. So try and look for companies that are producing technology that's actually built to last and built to be replaceable. So, you know, my phone and my computer, both designed that if the battery level goes, you can just easily buy a new battery and swap it out yourself. If technology changes and there's a new USB cable that comes into existence, then literally by it will take me like 10 seconds to swap my USB section of my laptop out for a new USB format and things like that. So it's just designed so that it can be swapped and replaced and repaired to increase its longevity and upgraded, so that you're not having to sacrifice performance, because that's often the case with technology, is that even if it's not broken, there's like something which is going to be faster or better. That's one option if you're buying new. Michelle, I know you've bought a lot of refurbished stuff yourself.
Yeah, I buy refurbished tech. I actually all do it. Phones and laptops, they're all refurb, so they come guaranteed. The warranty is the same as a new device. But what it means is that you don't have to buy something new, which is then created. All new materials being used, and actually something that's already in the environment can be put to some other use. So, Katie, I think what you've described there really well. If we talk avoid, reduce, replace, we'll come up with some ideas. I mean, Casey's mentioned there structuring your business so that you're buying things with that carbon footprint in mind. And now when we say avoid things, Katie's given some good examples, so such as changing face-to-face travel to doing Zoom meetings. Now, of course, some meetings I think are worthwhile face-to-face, and you may reduce the number of Zoom meetings you need if you don't have, you know, if you have a face-to-face followed by Zoom. So actually, but then also means avoiding certain activities to get altogether. Now, that may require you to rethink how you do your business. So Katie's mentioned there, you may have to set your business up with this in mind. So think about, I think three things, Katie: things coming into your business, so your suppliers, anyone who's providing you stuff. So I would like to avoid using Amazon, but I'm not there yet. There's things that are going on in your business that you personally do, and then there's the waste, what comes out the back end of your business, if you like. So that strategy piece, if you're going to avoid certain activities, you may have to change the way you do business. You may not, but something to think about. You know, you might go paperless, for example, to avoid printing stuff. So we're talking about a shift. Actually, what Kate is describing here is we're talking about reducing and replacing, and most of the activity we're going to do comes in here. And I think this is the bit that's probably a little bit easier for most people. So Katie's mentioned replacing tech with either refurb tech or modular tech, which I think is really good.
I should note that if you've got perfectly good serviceable technology or equipment, don't replace it for something environmentally friendly before it needs replacing. So do that. That's where the avoid part comes in as well. So if you don't actually need anything new, don't buy anything new. And then at the point where it's reached the natural end of its life cycle, then at that point, if you're making a decision to buy something new or refurbished, you can then do the research into it. If anyone's interested, my laptop is called Framework Laptop, and I love it. My phone is a Fairphone, which is not an affair phone. It's not a phone I have to conduct my illicit extramarital affairs. It's called a Fairphone. I love that less. I want to love it.
You've really tried with the Fairphones.
My laptop I really love, my Fairphone. Other people have great experiences with it. I just seem to be unlucky. I've had two now. They just seem to be a bit buggy, but I'm still glad I tried. I would maybe go down the refurbished route next time.
Yeah. And Katie, actually, what you just said is true, not just with tech, but with furniture, like office furniture as well. Mm. You can actually buy it from charity shops. You can donate it after use. Tech can go to people like Music Magpie or Envirophone. So, but office furniture, chairs, tables, this type of thing, this also applies here as well. And I mentioned, Katie, earlier, you know, maybe reducing your travel, and maybe once you've got that relationship, doing things by Zoom. You were just sharing some interesting tips to me earlier today. of things that people can do to reduce their impact. And something that people don't really think about is we've talked about physical items, but people don't realize that online storage is not that environmentally friendly. And you had some really good suggestions of how you could reduce your impact on things like Zoom meetings.
Yeah, it's really interesting actually, yeah, because we sort of think about online storage, you know, it's in the cloud, it's somewhere else, it's not on our laptop, so we don't have to worry about it. But there is no cloud, it's just someone else's computer, you know, like all the stuff that's stored in the cloud and any websites that are hosted online. So all websites are made up of a collection of files, and just like files have to live on your computer, files on the internet that form up websites, they have to live somewhere too. And so you have basically these big kind of powerful computers called servers. And so, sorry to get all kind of techy here, but basically all websites and all cloud storage and everything like that is all still stored on a computer somewhere. So it's on a computer that's in like a kind of big shipping container or a warehouse somewhere. And all of those computers use energy, and they also require things to be built to house them. And so they require the actual computer to be built to store the data. They require the energy used to power that and store the data for that. They quite often require cooling because they produce a lot of heat. So they need energy to do the air conditioning, although increasingly they're trying to build them in ways where there's natural ways of cooling them. So they're often built near the sea, so they can actually use seawater to cool them and things like that. And then also the building that houses them, they often need to be purpose built. So there's actually a lot of embedded carbon in that process of storing and providing data to us online. And that's often a hidden cost that we don't think about. So there are simple things that we can do. Again, if one person does it, you might think, how much of a difference can that really make? But then if you think about, if we're talking about Zoom meetings, if however many millions, possibly billions of people across the world are doing this in their Zoom meetings, all of a sudden those numbers start to add up. So the main thing is, for anything digital, I would say, follows the same hierarchy we've talked about, avoid, reduce, and so on. So it's all about just not doing things unnecessarily. So for Zoom meetings, it has a larger carbon footprint the more participants there are. So that's another good reason to only invite people to your meeting that need to be in the meeting. Not only is that good for carbon, that's probably good for business and other people's happiness as well. No one wants to be in unnecessary meetings. And also, when you're in the meeting, if you don't need to have your camera on, then turn your camera off, because then video uses more data than not having video on. So you can save data. So if you're in a large Zoom meeting where actually most people are not going to be able to see your video and you don't need to interact, then you can turn it off. Obviously, it's a balance, and you want to make sure that if you are having a small meeting with people where it's important for people, you know, have those extra cues from your facial expressions, and if you're sharing screens and demonstrating things, then keep the video on. But that's a couple of things you can do for Zoom. Same with emails. Don't send unnecessary emails. Don't CC people, and they don't need to be CC'd. If you're sending attachments, then if you've already uploaded the file to somewhere online, like Dropbox or somewhere, send a link to that file rather than sending a huge 20 megabyte file on the internet. And when we're talking about cloud storage, again, now we start to have, you know, really high capacity devices in terms of memory. We don't need to be as strict with our, you know, devices and things. Quite often it used to be like, oh, my phone's full, or oh, my laptop's full, I need to delete some unnecessary files. With cloud storage and with larger laptop capacities and things like that, we just kind of keep all our old photos, we keep all our old emails, we keep all our old data. So getting into the habit of having a digital declutter and getting rid of anything you actually don't need to store, making sure you don't have duplicates and things stored in multiple places, that can also reduce your data usage.
That's good, Katie. And that's really good for GDPR as well. So if you save your files with the data at the end of them, you know when they're ready for destruction according to your data protection policy, which you obviously have in good working order. And that can really help as well. But that was something that was new to me, Kate, this idea of green computing, sometimes people call it. And I didn't even know that that was a thing. But you can, have your website, for example, with green providers who, you know, offer green computing as a provider. So if you've not looked into that, that's something you can do. But definitely a declutter is key, because I think I'm getting to the point where I'm going to have to like buy more storage. It's like, I don't need more storage, I need to delete more stuff. So I think that's a really, really good one. And then also, Kate, there's just other things we can do. Like, again, I do these sessions with groups of freelancers and ask them for their ideas, and they come up with such great ideas about how they can reduce their carbon footprint. One woman said something really obvious to me. She said, "Michelle, you could just, like, one of the things I'm going to do is turn off my laptop over my lunch break." She says, "I do take an hour for lunch, but I leave my laptop on sleep, or I just shut the lid." She said, "I could just turn it off, and there's really no reason why I shouldn't just power it up again when I go back to my desk." And I thought, I take a lunch break too, and I should definitely do it. It's jump start on most laptops these days. It just fires up so quickly. And even things like just light bulbs or not heating the whole house. I only heat this room with a small fan heater because I'm not heating a whole house, partly because cost, partly because, you know, that's just not good for the environment. And some people I'm speaking to are either heating themselves as opposed to the room. So they're buying rechargeable USB gilets, and they're buying clothing that heats them. And so actually that's going to keep them warm rather than heating their entire house or their entire room. It's a great idea.
I would add a small disclaimer at this point.
It's the battery, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Make sure you're using safe technology that's not going to, like, explode and fry you.
But set you alight.
But also, if you live in an old house or a house which has a lot of damp, like if you live by the coast, then there's always quite high moisture content in the air, then it may actually be a false economy for you to not heat the whole house. So in my old house, Peak District, it was an old Edwardian property from 1910, I think it was. And we thought we were being really good and having the thermostat really low and have it keeping a lot of the rooms cold, and actually ended up causing more problems that then required more work to fix them because the rooms had got to the point where they were really damp and needed remedial work doing to them. So think it's with everything like this, it's always a balance, and it's not about asking you to make yourself miserable in order to save the planet or anything, but it's about how can you make little changes that are going to over time have a cumulative impact.
Yeah, definitely, Katie. I think that's true. And like you said, there's always a bit of a trade-off there. And we've talked about things you can do to reduce usage. And like Katie said, we think that most of these are probably obvious. You know, take your water bottle, have a reusable coffee cup, blah, blah, blah. Reduce your, you know, choose a green energy supplier. So a lot of these we know are quite obvious, but some of them are not so obvious.
Even the obvious ones, like this is what we were talking about before the episode. Like, to me, it's so ingrained that I bring an empty water bottle or a full water bottle that I can then refill. And I bring my keep cup everywhere I go, a reusable coffee cup. And so I don't have the, like, disposable barista cup and everything else. But, like, it did require some behaviour change for me to do that. Like, I made it my New Year's resolution a few years ago that I only would drink from a reusable coffee cup. It was just before COVID, annoyingly. So that's, I did a year of it. And then, actually, people stopped accepting them for a little while. But they do accept them again now. And so, actually, it might not be obvious to you to try and set your environment up for success. So you might kind of know, oh yeah, it's useful to use a reusable water bottle rather than single-use plastic. Or it's good to use a reusable coffee cup rather than a single-use one. But then you might go out and forget. So actually, a lot of this is about setting yourself up so it's easy for you to take the actions that can have a positive impact. So have a bottle that lives in your bag, maybe, or put it by the front door before you go out. So I have a bottle that lives in my bag. It's not the main water bottle that I like drinking from, but if I forget to bring the main one, I've got that spare one in my bag, and now I tend to look out for refill points, like, you know, Manchester Piccadilly train station, a lot of the main train stations as well, they will have refill points. Airports and things have them. But even if you just go into like a cafe or a bar, they're normally happy to refill it for you. There is a scheme, I think, where you can look online and it will kind of plot. It'll show you like a map or show you where local businesses are happy to refill your water bottle for you and things like that. You might think, oh, well, what's that actually got to do with carbon? That's more to do with waste and plastic usage. But actually, the energy and the carbon that's required to create the plastic bottles is part of the problem. So there's the waste afterwards, but then there's the resources that need to be used to create it.
And I think that's where people, if like you, Katie, if they're already doing these things as a matter of habit, and we should make them habit, I think the other thing is to think a little bit broader. So Katie, you've mentioned a few things here, like suppliers. So one of the simple things we can do is to reduce the number of deliveries we have, or choose our suppliers carefully. So one, can you choose green suppliers? And I speak to lots of businesses that are talking to their suppliers saying, can you make better packaging? Can we consolidate consolidate deliveries. I've started to buy things in bulk, one, because it's less deliveries, but trying to make, you know, not just making impulse online purchases, but can I bulk them together? And I'm trying, you know, I've even bought my stationery, for example. I've bought a load of it, which means I've got to store it, but it means I'm not, you know, getting a notepad delivered, which is shameful. That shouldn't happen. So I think about your suppliers and what comes in. So it's not, okay, it says embedded carbon, it's not just you, but who's coming to you, how are they delivering,
how's it packaged. Yeah.
I think we've both ordered veg boxes before. They keep it so it's delivered local. But then think about how it goes out of your business as well. So one, rather than responsibly getting rid of waste, could you just not buy the thing in the first place? But also, if you are having it out of your business, do you know how things can be recycled? Are you recycling them properly? Educate yourself on that, because that increases the amount of recycling that is done. And one freelancer was telling me about TerraCycle, and she said there are waste boxes you can order for anything that the council won't take. And that's one way she does it in her business. And think about your business too. Speak to other business owners that have a similar sort of thing as you. I was speaking to a cleaner that was thinking about, well, what chemicals do I use in my paints? What chemicals are used to clean my paints? Who else that I could speak to that would help me do this cleaner? I was speaking to cleaners who said, well, look, there's environmental products, but it will cost me more. If I'm competing with other cleaners for business, will they still buy from me? Or would it be a selling point that they know that I'm cleaning their home in a green way? And I think, Katie, my favourite one is probably the lady who's a florist, and actually she knows that how much embedded carbon there is in transporting and refrigerating flowers. So she's found a meadow, and the owner's happy for her to rewild it and to regrow things there again. So she's going to maintain the land for them, and she's going to grow her own flowers, so she can massively reduce her reliance on other florists and getting wholesale flowers shipped in. So that's a long-term project. That's going to take her a while. And I speak to so many people who are like, oh yeah, I should switch to a Tesla. Well, you're probably not going to switch to a Tesla tomorrow. So actually maybe just putting things in place now about how you structure your business and about the purchases you plan to make, that can all help. So things coming in, things going out, what you're doing on a day-to-day basis, this all helps too. As Katie said, don't be deterred if you can't do it perfectly.
Yeah, and I think as well, like you mentioned suppliers there, Michelle, if you can favour suppliers who themselves are taking a lot of steps to reduce their own impacts, then that has a knock-on effect on you as well. So choosing smaller businesses, local businesses where there's, like you say, fewer delivery miles, but also just people who are like obviously trying to also do the right thing, supporting them and encouraging them can make a big difference. I think one of the things that as a freelancer, like I said before, you kind of don't think of a lot of costs or a lot of things being related to the business, but even things like, Michelle, you mentioned toilet roll earlier, you know, if you were in an office, you would have to buy toilet roll as a supply. Therefore, there's a percentage of toilet roll that you're using for your business if you're working at home during the day. So there's things like that, like the coffee that you use, you know, milk that you use, you know, could you, in terms of like emissions and everything like that, if you want to reduce methane emissions, one way to do that is to switch to plant-based milk potentially. You know, could you swap that out in tea or coffee or things like that? That's one thing to look at. It's not straightforward because there are other costs associated with transporting it and everything. So with these things, there's often no one right or wrong answer. But there's things that you can do. It's not just, you know, you might think, oh, it's my computer and it's paper. There's actually a lot more that you probably do use as your business, even things down to like the light bulbs that you use in your house. Are they LED energy efficient ones or not? So yeah, just wanted to mention that to start being aware of what actually, you know, if you were in an office, what would count as a business thing, and if that's the case, that might be relevant.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, Katie, as well, you've mentioned there, some of these things we're mentioning aren't perfect. Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. There are always trade-offs. When the Clean Air Zone was announced here, we had a knackered old camper van. We've now upgraded to an eco camper, but at the time, you know, it's like, Jesus, that's going to cost us £10 a day to just drive a couple of miles down the road. And so actually, as well as getting, we've gone hybrid rather than electric, because I think I would suffer from range anxiety, and we've got like a solar panel on top. But actually, having gone from two cars down to one, I now use an e-bike for short journeys. So for me, that replaces the second vehicle. So if I want to nip to the shops or nip to the doctors or whatever, I can do so. I don't need a car for that. And you know, I did get a comment from one chap on the workshop saying, well, Al, that's no good because, you know, you have to produce these batteries for the e-bike. And he's absolutely right, you do. But for me, I feel like on the whole, that's better than owning two vehicles. animals, and I think it's probably cleaner and healthier. So I think that's not a perfect solution, but there is a trade-off there. And everything you do, Kate, you've mentioned plant-based milks. If you have soy milk, there's a whole thing about the water that's needed to produce soy milk. It's never going to be perfect, but I think you've just got to make the best judgment that you can. And like as we said, bit by bit, all these little things we do add up. Let's talk about the other thing, which is, you know, well, what about planting trees? So we did mention that you can sign up to a lovely scheme, and once you've avoided, reduced and replaced to get your carbon footprint down, I hope you've got it down as low as you can go, but you're not going to take carbon usage out of your business completely. So if you wanted to get to net zero, for example, or offset any carbon that you've got, you could choose an offset scheme. Funnily enough, there's not a set scheme. I naively thought this would be easy. I thought you could just go, right, what schemes are there? What standards should they go to? How do I know if I'm getting the right one? And it's not that easy. So I can't really recommend a scheme, but one of the things that you can do, just a few questions to ask yourself. Whatever offset scheme you choose, ask yourself, will the emissions be locked away permanently? So for example, trees get burnt down, they get blight. If the trees were burnt down, then the emissions would be released. So it's a cheap and accessible way of doing it. It's not always the most permanent. Also ask yourself, the emissions are going to be shifted elsewhere. Sometimes people say, well, give us your money and I'll save a patch of rainforest. But because of the desire for cows for meat farming, they basically just clear another area of forest. So all we're really doing is shifting emissions. So challenge any offset provider with this. And also it has to be initiative has to be additional. So is the scheme being sold to multiple customers? Is the same patch of forest being sold to lots of different companies? That wouldn't really help much either as well. So there are some standards, there are some codes like the Woodland Code or the Peatland Code, for example, which offer a standard, some reassurance, some transparency, but there is really no one standard to help you with this. So these are the sorts of things we want to ask. And Katie, it's not just offsetting as well, there's other things we can do as well, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly. So with finding a good offset scheme, it can be tricky. You could always have a look at what other reputable companies, if they're using a particular scheme, you could, you know, look into the one that they're using. But actually, as an alternative or an addition to offsetting, there are other things you can do. So you could spend the money that you would have invested in offsetting into some other initiative that helps to reduce carbon in other ways. There's a scheme called 1% for the Planet, which was set up by the guy who founded Patagonia. And the idea of that is any business saves 1% of their income in any given year and donates that income or that percentage to environmental causes. So half of your donation can be in the form of in-kind or pro bono work. So in my instance, for example, I could create a website for an environmental charity, and that would count towards the price that I would have charged them if I did it for free, would count towards my donation towards 1% for the Planet. But only half of that can come from the in-kind stuff. So the rest of it is a monetary donation to an environmental cause. And you then just have to provide evidence of your income and where you've donated your money to. So that's one way that I think I'm planning to do in the future, because I think that's a nice way of demonstrating that the larger the business, the more income they earn, it's more likely they're going to have a bigger impact, a bigger carbon impact, and a bigger impact in other environmental ways. So I like that idea that it's 1% of a business in a huge business which is having a massive impact. 1% of their income is going to be quite a significant donation, but it's still accessible for people who are small businesses and starting out. There's an initial fee to join, or I think an annual fee to kind of be a member of it, but that can count towards your donation amount as well. So it's just for the people who kind of administer the program. So that's one option. But yeah, the other option is just to support local initiatives that are actually doing work that you can really quantify the impact of. And sometimes that might be a better decision than, you know, investing in a generic offsetting scheme that you never actually see the results of.
And I think once we've done this, so I mentioned you may not be going for a carbon net zero, carbon neutral goal, but if you were, then yeah, do all those things to reduce your carbon footprint. If you keep your data, you'll know what your carbon footprint is. And if you get to the point where you know what your carbon footprint is and you're offsetting that carbon dioxide equivalent, then you can claim to be carbon neutral. It's not all on you. I've met a clothing company who claims to be carbon neutral. They use a net zero supplier. Their supplier are doing all the lead Legworks, they have designs for t-shirts, and the supplier they use sustainably produced t-shirts. Their packaging, their transport's all sustainable, and it's one of these businesses where their designs go on the producer's t-shirts, and it's all packed sustainably. So actually their impact to their business is very, very low, but they're using a supplier who makes that a lot easier. So I think that's the key thing. I mentioned earlier, no set standard really for claiming that claiming your green credentials, which would make it really easy to compare businesses. So I think that's a good thing, because for businesses like us, it'd be really hard to meet that barrier, that standard, or pay for that accreditation. There is a downside though, and Katie, I know you're already concerned about greenwashing, because while it's great to share this with your customers, some companies do all the sharing without necessarily doing the caring. I've just made that up.
I love it.
And I didn't.
I want to use that now. I think that's one thing just to be mindful of, both when you're making decisions as a consumer or a buyer, is kind of look beyond the initial shiny claims and actually have a look at the actual sustainability commitments. You know, it's very easy to stick a sustainability policy on your website that says we care, but what are they actually doing about it? There's various websites and initiatives where you can actually check people's credentials, especially for some of the larger companies. So Ethical Consumer is one of them. They have a database of different companies and how well they rate on different ethical scales, and you can kind of customize what's important to you. So if carbon or energy use or impact, environmental impacts, is most important to you, you can filter by who has the worst and the best impacts. There are other ones for different industries. I know there's a site, I can't remember the name of it, but for clothing, things like that. So make sure when you're buying things, you're trying to kind of at least have a bit of a look into the claims of sustainability. And then likewise, be careful about what you're claiming for yourself. I know it's easy to shy away from wanting to talk about it because you're scared of criticism. And I think that is a shame. And I think we should all be trying to talk about it more, even if it's imperfect. But just again, make sure that you're not accidentally, I don't think most of our listeners would do it deliberately, but make sure you're not accidentally making any sweeping kind of greenwashing claims about doing more than you're actually doing. So just be mindful of how you talk about it. And I think it's more, for me anyway, I would rather see a business and do business with somebody who was just being honest about what they are doing and even sharing some of their failings. I'd rather work with them than somebody who's just claiming to do stuff but isn't giving me any information to back it up.
Yeah, and I think you did that really well, Katie. I mentioned you wrote a blog about your Fairphone and that how you were using this Fairphone, but then when, like you say, it broke, you went back to a Samsung, and you were just really honest on social media about why you went back, and I think you were quite honest about feeling a bit disappointed, but you outlined your reasoning and thinking, and you did say you would go back to using a Fairphone again when they upgraded, which you did. You were consistent, and I think, like you say, I think if you don't wait until you're in a perfect position, as Katie said, start talking now. Start those conversations, and you may well find that your customers or your followers give you advice or share resources or empathize with your journey. And I think if you were too perfect, people would probably find that either unbelievable or a bit off-putting. I think it's actually better to try and fail and try again than to not bother at all. So I think that's really important.
Yeah, we mentioned having a sustainability policy earlier as well, and that's a simple thing that you can do. It doesn't have to be this like super formal document, a bit like when we've talking about your values before. It's just kind of guidance to live by or work by in freelancing case. So it doesn't have to be really in depth. It can just be, okay, yeah, this is my commitment that I'm making. It's to research the credentials, it's to choose local suppliers where possible, talk about what you want with your suppliers as well, whoever you're buying from. Ask them the questions, because even if they're not able to do what you're asking now, the more people who actually ask questions, the more likely it's going to have an impact. So like when I started trying to be a bit more vegan, I'm not fully vegan, I'm vegetarian, but I tried to be mostly vegan. And I remember like most places didn't used to serve oat milk. I don't really like soy milk. But even if I was going in somewhere that I'd been before and I knew that they didn't have oat milk, I'd always ask, because it's like, right, the more people ask, the more likely they're going to see a demand for it and the more likely they're going to have it. And now most places do have it. And that's kind of how I see sustainability and kind of carbon stuff going as well, is the more people who are asking for things to be done differently, the more reason a business has to do things differently.
Yeah, I think so, Katie. Keep that conversation going. I think having a policy, sharing it with people, talking about it, and again, if they can't help you now, like Katie said, it may be in the future that they're able to accommodate you. So I think this will really help too. The final thing I think you can do is you can educate yourself. So there's if you look on Meetup or if you look at Eventbrite, there's always events going on. I'm seeing this discussed more in freelancer groups or small business groups, and there's plenty of help available online. I mentioned the Carbon Trust, they've got some good tips for businesses in there. Some local councils have some good information, but some are better than others. I think the UK government has businessclimatehub.org, where they've got tools and resources that people can use. So again, you know, there's lots of things that are available to help you. And of course, I mentioned this is the direction of travel, so we are seeing more support for businesses, big and small, on their journey. So yeah, start thinking about it now. We're going to head there anyway, but it's much better if you're ahead of the game and plan this into your business strategy.
100%. So at the end of each episode, we always like to share our two top takeaways, one each. So Michelle, if you could just share one tip around reducing or even just working on your carbon footprint as a freelancer, what would it be?
I think just start with just examining what the state of play is, Katie. Where are you now? So I think even if you don't keep records, maybe just start to have a little review or audit of your business and ask, you know, what can you do to avoid, reduce, replace, and finally offset when you get to the end of that. But I'd say start with avoiding, reducing, replacing. That's what's going to make the biggest impact. What about you, Katie?
Yeah, kind of similar, but I think not so similar that it doesn't count. I'd say look for the low-hanging fruit. So where's one thing where you can have an easy win, feel good about yourself and make a difference? It's probably something you've been thinking about for a while, like, oh, I should get around to doing this, or just what's an easy decision that you can make or an easy change that you can make? Maybe you've moved into a new house and you're on the kind of legacy suppliers that don't have proper renewable energy, or they're maybe not a company that's focused on renewables, maybe just switching your energy supplier, something like that. I know it's not always the right time to switch at the moment because of all the energy bills and everything, but just is there a little action you can take now that you've been meaning to take? That would be one. And then if I can cheekily have another, because I think we haven't mentioned it that much in the podcast, is when you are going to buy something, think about its entire life cycle. I think we've sort of touched on it, but I just want to emphasize that it's not just about when you're buying something, it's about how you're actually going to dispose of it and what you're going to do with it at the end of its life as well. So try and think about buying something that maybe is a bit more long lasting if you can afford it, and think about how you'll get rid of it if you don't need it anymore.
That's a good tip, I like that.
So as always, we'd love to hear from you if you have any of your own tips around being more sustainable or reducing your carbon footprint. And if you have any other suggestions for challenges you'd like us to tackle, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at 99problemscast, that's the number 99, problems and then cast as in podcast. And we'll see you again for another episode of 99 Problems, But A Boss Ain't One.